Well, good morning, everyone. For this purposes, this is Five Love Languages of the Children, Sunday, March 12th. I think that's right. Thanks, everyone, for being here. I know we've got a light crowd. So to sort of recap what we talked about last week, particularly for the new faces here, really what we're trying to accomplish here in following the book sort of as a guidepost, and as I mentioned last week, in no way a prerequisite to to meaningfully participating in the class to even have opened this, much less even know what it is. But the central theme behind what we're exploring is developing the love relationship between the parent and the child, and the main sort of way of going about that. Good morning. Is learning to fill the child's love tank through that particular child's love language, and so this book sets forth five love languages of children. There is touch, words of affirmation, acts of service, gifts, and quality time. And so today, last week we explored physical touch, and today we are going to focus on words of affirmation. So, like I did last week, I think to introduce the topic, I want to read a little bit from just one passage from the beginning of the words of affirmation section. So, as I mentioned last week, we're picking topics just in a linear fashion throughout the book. Sort of, I'm not trying to emphasize one or the other. This is sort of just how we're working our way through the discussion. So, in communicating love, words are powerful. Words of affection and endearment, words of praise and encouragement, words that give positive guidance say, I care about you. Such words are like a gentle, warm rain falling on the soul. They nurture the child's inner sense of worth and security. Even though such words are quickly said, they are not soon forgotten. A child reaps the benefit of affirming words for a lifetime. Conversely, cutting words spoken out of short-lived frustration can hurt a child's self-esteem and cast doubts about his abilities. Children think deeply, think we deeply believe what we say. And so one little thing on there I want to drill down on is, and bring up for the group for discussion, is even though such words are quickly said, they are not soon forgotten. And so what I'd like to talk about is think about positive and negative words that we receive from our parents in our own childhood, and sort of what impact did they have on us at the time, and what impact have they had on us over since then. And so just to open it up for, I don't know, getting personal very quickly, but if anybody is willing to share sort of memories they may have had of sort of verbal communication with their parents as they grew up, and sort of how that has helped helped or hurt you at the time, and how that has sort of stuck with you as time has gone on.
I mean, in my family, my mom was more of the verbal person. She's the talker. She's the one that would say, I love you. She's the one that would give the affirmation of you're doing a great job, or whatever it happened to be that in my life. My dad was not so much that person, but I never really felt like he didn't love me. I just, and maybe that's because my love language is different, I don't know, but he never was the one that was outwardly verbal about it. But I know now with my own children, I look to Jim to make sure that he is saying those things, because maybe it did impact me as a child. Like, I want to make sure that my children are hearing it from both parents, the verbal affirmations of just everyday life in general. Not just I love you, but just, wow, you did amazing on that at school, or look at how you're playing soccer today. That's, doing a great job. So maybe inwardly it did affect me, but I don't dwell on it.
Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah, that does make sense. And for me personally, I hadn't really thought about this topic until I actually was, frankly, reading the book and sort of preparing for discussion in the class. But as I look back, sort of thinking about what I got from both parents, my mom, as I mentioned last week, was very doting, physically affectionate. And as I think about it, my dad was very much, I would say, probably focused on sort of acts of service, providing for the family. That's just sort of what he did. And I don't think I got a lot of positive words of affirmation from my parents through, and I like to think that, I worked hard in school, did well in college, and I've been professionally successful. And as I sort of think about this now, in some ways I'm still trying to get those sort of positive words of sort of encouragement or praise from my parents. And I wish my wife were sitting here because she would be shaking her head madly, yes. It affects me still to this day that because I didn't get it then, I'm still trying to get it now. And it's not that they don't love me, it's just they weren't wired that way. And sort of maybe innately I sort of was looking for or needed that and sort of never got it. And so I'm sort of still looking for it today.
Well, and I think it was a different time, too, as far as, like, the dad's role in the family was different when we were growing up, and their job, like you said, was the provider, my dad flew for American Airlines, so he was gone a lot, but that was his way of giving to the family. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was the provider. My mom didn't work, so she was the one who was there and taking care of the kids and whatnot, so I think that plays into it a little bit, too. But I think you still do search for it, even as an adult. Because I still want my dad to be like, even to this day, something that I do, you know, to acknowledge it.
Yeah, I mean, like one example, this, you know, about a year ago, I made partner in my firm, which I considered to be a big deal. It was you know, worked my butt off to do, and sort of got it like a, oh, that's great, that's nice, from my parents. Like, really? You know, it just. Once again, not they weren't being mean-spirited about it or, you know, trying to be hurtful. It just sort of still to this day, they don't give that, and I'm still looking for it. So anyway, anybody else have anything? Or not going to cold call on personal questions. I might cold call on more more just general questions. Well, so have we seen a similar impact now that, to your point, dynamic has shifted somewhat and sort of, you know, from traditional roles on who provides what. Have we seen sort of, I'm actually going to close the door now that we're probably not going to have any more. Sort of before we dive into sort of some specifics, curious about any thoughts people have had and sort of what they've observed in their own children, and sort of, or do we have kids who are constantly looking for praise? Have we given that to them? Sort of, what have your experiences have been, and sort of now you with the opportunity to provide sort of those words of encouragement and praise? And then we'll go after we'll go into more specifics. But I'm just curious from a general standpoint whether we have any experiences we'd like to share.
Nothing. I mean, I think going back to the previous conversation, though, I think it was. My parents, the roles were very much the same as far as, you know, my dad worked a lot. My mom did from, you know, every now and then, but she was definitely the more physical. And there weren't very many words of affirmation for my father really either, anything like along those lines. But now I think just from having that perspective whenever I was a child and maybe wanting more from my dad, I think I'm a little more careful about giving that to my own kids. And I feel like sometimes it does change, like, the kids, what they need or what they're looking for or what they react to, from whether it be, like, physical touch, whether it be hugs or, you know, laying with them at night, you know, to just telling them how proud I am or things along those lines. I think it does change from time to time. Like, recently both of them have been wanting me to lay down with them in bed after we read books or something, you know, after we get done. And that just kind of comes and goes, it seems like. But sometimes we're ready to go right to bed. But so I don't know, it's just, I don't know, I think our past obviously shapes how we treat things here in the present. But I try to be more aware of what they are looking for or need. Kind of moment.
I have two very different children. My son is very needy and wants the praise and wants to make sure you see everything that he did and are you acknowledging that he did amazing on that Lego tower he made or whatever. You know, it's everything. Peyton is not as much like that. If you give her praise, she's a little. She doesn't react in the way of, oh, wow, you gave me praise. It's more of like, oh, gosh, like, you noticed something. You know, she's a little bit more, I don't necessarily want you to notice. But she does like the hugs and things like that. And she'll want me to rub her back or whatnot. But not so much the verbal praise, which is kind of like Jim, so they kind of follow suit of each other. He would agree. So, and I'm Parker is more like me. So, but yeah, it's very different in my house as far as how I have to give praise and how I have to acknowledge children's needs.
And I don't know. It kind of depends on the praise or what exactly you're saying to your kids. Because I've also read that it's not good to, like, if they've created something, like, let's say they painted a picture, and you say, "Oh my gosh, that's wonderful!" You know, that you're over praising. Your kids don't really; they tend to not believe you, and it actually hurts their self-esteem too.
Yep.
I mean, our parents didn't worry about it as much as we do. I feel like, oh my gosh, the pressure's on.
Yeah, and we can actually jump ahead, because that's one of the sort of topics I want to drill down on is this healthy use of praise. One of the things they talk about in the book is, you know, and by the way, defining praise, we mean expressing positivity about what a child does, not who the child is. And so we're talking about recognizing something they've done rather than an innate personal trait. And so sort of giving them positive reinforcement about something they've done. What they're trying to, the words they use here is keep praise genuinely meaningful. They say kids are very good about knowing when they think when praise is actually justified and when you're frankly blowing smoke. And so, you know, the danger, they say, of overuse of praise here is if you're overpraising a child and then they don't get it for something that is actually justified, there's going to be an inherent anxiety that you might be creating the child, like, oh, well, what did I do something wrong here, when they actually did something right, because they may not actually have received it at that time. And so I think that's one of the things. I mean, you're right, is that try and keep praise commensurate with what they've actually done, as opposed to, you know, overinflating their sense of self, because if they don't get it maybe from an external source at some point when you're not around, say maybe it's at school and they've done, you know, gotten an A, or, you know, done really well in, you know, a sporting event, you're not there and they don't get it, then they're, you know, might start questioning their, you know, whether they've done the right thing when it actually should be reinforced.
I'm reading a book right now about, it's called Unselfie. It's about why empathetic kids are successful. And one of the things it says is you have to, by verbally affirming empathetic acts and empathetic behavior in your kids, you can develop their moral identity. But if you aren't verbally, like, affirming that, like, oh wow, look at what you did for your friend, that's such a wonderful thing, you are an empathetic child. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't really occur, then the kids don't really develop the moral identity, unless you're just repeating it to them and saying, this is, you are that child, because you're exhibiting that behavior.
No, I think that's an excellent point. One of the things they talk about in the book here is that, particularly with words of affirmation, you're not just filling a child's emotional love tank when you give them that positive reinforcement. You are shaping their moral and ethical development, their social development, in terms of how they interact with other people. And so I think being cognizant of this, even if your child's primary love language isn't receiving those words of affirmation, still giving them a positive, reasonable, commensurate with what they've done reinforcement is going to still set them down the right path in their development. So let's talk about that a little more. I mean, so I think I've been guilty of overpraising, and now I'm sort of, you know, just, oh, that's the most, you know, particularly with small children, it's really hard not to, oh, that's the most wonderful thing that I've ever seen, you know, because particularly my 4-year-old daughter, I think she's seeking it out from me as well, and so I'm guilty of that. And I don't have, you know, as I mentioned last week, I am in no way an expert. I'm just somebody who read the book and who was willing to sit here. I don't have any sort of educational background in childhood development. And so I'm curious about your own experiences on sort of how you have used praise with your children, because, you know, I overpraise, and I'm trying to find ways to sort of scale that back so they're not, what's the word for, you know, I'm not creating special snowflakes.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious if there's any experiences that you've had that you might be willing to share on sort of how you've gone about that, or whether you're guilty of it just like me, or sort of what your experiences have been.
You know, we've always focused on trying to praise their effort. So, I mean, I don't care what the picture is fantastic or it's a, you know, looks like a Renoir or something, but it's more about how much effort they put into it. Some of that is just, I think, how my wife and I sort of were brought up, is that we were brought up very differently. Her family was like, if you worked really hard on something and got a, you know, 70, that was good. If you didn't and you got a 99, not good. You know, and so it was all about sort of how, you know, how much did you try. Now, obviously, you know, draw a painting, it's like, oh, it looks like you spent a lot of time on that. That's, you know, it's nice. As I'm trying to focus a little bit more on the effort than the outcomes, because I think sometimes, you know, what we don't want them to do is look at a picture we said it was good a year ago and be like, yeah, that's clearly not good. And my mom said it was good. So now when I do this new artwork or this new project or whatever, like, you know, does she believe me? But I know I spent time on that. So that's what we've tried to focus, you know, a little bit more on that than, I mean, obviously if something's good or interesting or you did a good job at school, but it's more about, hey, it looks like you worked hard to, you know, the teacher said you were good this week. Sounds like you worked hard on that, as opposed to being like the actual outcome. Because sometimes you don't work hard and things just kind of fall into place, and we don't want to really reward luck as much.
I think that's important. Because, I mean, I think that goes along with a lot of kids that are involved in sports and things like that, too. Like talking about their effort on the field. Because I think nowadays with the way sports are, it's different, you know, I mean, everybody's like, oh, everybody does a meeting, here's your participation trophy, like, you know, but to really talk about the effort, and my daughter is playing more competitive soccer now, and so we talk about, you know, it's not always about scoring the goal, it's about, you know, how hard did you try, and were you there for your team, were you supportive, you know, were you working together, and that kind of stuff. So I think that plays in to all aspects of life, you know, not just school and home necessarily.
Yeah, we had our basketball team award, like, handed out, you know, trophies or whatever on Friday, and my son got, like, kind of the hardest worker thing, and he was so proud of it, because every game, he was just, like, drenched in sweat, running up and down the court, and some kids were just sort of, and I was like, doesn't matter how many points you score, like, you know, hustle and work, so he was really proud to kind of get that. You know, I think everyone kind of got an award, but he was happy to get his, you know, hardest worker thing, because he wanted to work hard. And I think, you know, it's hard, I think, to connect that, because a lot of people work really hard and the results aren't always there in life and as a kid and adult. But
yeah, I think it's much easier to teach whenever your kids are on not so good athletic teams. So yeah, a couple years ago, my son's baseball team didn't win a single game, and so it was very, you know, important. And it became pretty easy just to stress the effort that, you know, you kind of put out there, you know, on an individual basis. And sometimes it falls your way and sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, the one thing you can be proud of, though, after the game is if you gave it your all. So it's just something that can be a little, sometimes more difficult, but makes winning a little more enjoyable, though, as well.
Yeah, so... For example, my son James, to echo something Melissa was saying, is that he went from Y soccer, and then he spent the past year on his first year of, I guess, what's called academy, with the FC Dallas program. And so it was a collection of good rec players who all came together and lost their first academy game 17-0 when they went out, you know, and played. And it was his self-esteem went from through the roof to down here, and it's been sort of measured trying to get it back up. But then this, you know, past weekend they beat another academy team 5-0, and they all worked hard. So it was a really tough time on the parents to try and reinforce the effort without the result, because they were so used to getting that. But I mean, I think it was really healthy for him to have to go through that process. It was healthy for us to have to try and guide him through that process. So I think sports is a great example of it, because, you know, I don't mean to speak for everybody, but I'm not the biggest fan of the participation trophy world. You know, sort of, you know, I think it's good to sort of at a very young age, but to make sure everybody's happy that, you know, recognizing they're participating, but at some point to start sort of recognizing something beyond just being there. But
well, that kind of goes into the whole entitled. And mm-hmm. I mean, I see that at school too. I mean, just in everyday things, like even if I play a game like with my class to like, win that back. So what are we going to win? What are we going to win if our team wins? We're going to win the satisfaction that we know. Doing a great job. So I mean, it's in their brains, I think, a lot with this age group or this time. I don't know. That they think there's something outward that's always going to come. So I think instilling the idea of the effort and working hard and working as a team and, you know, kinds of things are important.
I think it makes me think of this. I think there's all this emphasis. It's a little bit different direction, but all this emphasis on children being unique and special. Now, I do believe that everyone has special gifts, but you know, I think we're getting so invested in our kids, like, my kid is just is so gifted, it's just setting them up to have poor self-esteem when they get out there and realize, you know, maybe I'm not so special. We're just blowing smoke at our kids, and I think we have to be careful about that, too. I mean, I don't know if we're just, as parents, we're thinking about this, and maybe we're overthinking it in some ways, and want to invest so much into our kids' emotional stability that we're actually harming them with it.
I think if my wife were sitting here, she'd be saying, because my mom, I mean, all here is so smart, and so throughout school, like, I never really studied, and I'm smart. Well, I mean, there's a point in life where all of a sudden that doesn't work. I mean, you go to college, and you know, I was like, I have to, what is this whole study thing, right? And so, I mean, I was not set up, you know, at all. And so that's, again, we're trying to focus on. It's not about being smart. It's about you worked hard to learn something. Because I just, you know, I think we both didn't like to hear that. I mean, we heard the words. We both heard it growing up so much that it you know, it's like, I don't need to study for this test. I'm smart. And you show up and you get 100. And you're like, it just continues to affirm it. But, again, somewhere in that educational, you know, timeline, it that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Everyone's smart at some point, and everyone's the guy next to you is working harder than you.
So we'll switch gears a little bit. I want to come back to and talk a little bit more about how we encourage our children. But one of the things I skipped over, so we could talk about praise, is using the words "I love you" as words of affirmation, particularly with young children, because it's, once again, we think that's probably an easy way for us to think we're giving our children positive words, you know, making sure that they feel loved, oh, I love you. But with our young children, they don't always understand what that means. You know, love is an abstract concept. Small children can't see what love is if the words "I love you" are being used in a vacuum. And so trying to show that our children, when we use the words "I love you," is it coupled with a hug, or is it coupled with something you're doing for them, so that they're not just hearing the words, they're understanding for themselves and developing that, you know, developing what they think that "I love you" means. And so, and when children finally understand what it means, I think it's a very, very valuable tool, you know, particularly when they're leaving home, going to school, telling them, you know, "I love you," so they're taking that, those words and all of the meaning of those words with them. But you know, maybe we can talk a little bit about, particularly those of us with younger children, sort of how we help our children understand what those words mean. And so, at least from my own experiences, it's always been, you know, I think I'm particularly, you know, my kids like to cuddle, and so when they're cuddling, sort of, you know, rubbing their back or something, you know, coupling in the words "I love you" there. I think that's a, you know, an easy way to do it. But I'm curious if there's other sort of experiences that we've had, because, you know, in sort of helping our children understand, because they're very, very impactful, meaningful words that will really be very important to our children for a lifetime. But how do we teach our children what "I love you" means?
I think it's important not to overuse it. I mean, obviously, you know, I think they all understand and know that we love them and stuff. But I, you know, it's generally, you know, at night, whenever we're going to bed, you know, I mean, that's obviously, you know, majority of the time, or, you know, every night, that's what we say, right? And, you know, outside of that, I mean, it's, you know, it's not very consistent, I guess. You know, there may be, like, some special moments or something like that, where it's just maybe the two of you, and, you know, you give them a big hug, and you tell them that you love them and stuff like that. But, I don't know, I think, right, I mean, we want, you know, just our entire lifetime, right? It's like some of the most special words that we have in our language. And so I just think that that needs to be like in the right situations used, right? Because that teaches them how strong that feeling is, as opposed to, you know, growing up in life, I think it's always very important, though, like, it's a special bond, right, that you have between two people whenever you love them. Mm-hmm. So I think if you start just kind of overusing that in day-to-day, then some of the importance of those words and the feelings may be a little, you know, kind of, I don't know, I think they're just...
loses maybe some of the luster, or how special it is. Maybe if you're saturating with that sentiment.
We overuse it. I think.
Well, I don't know if we overuse it. I mean, we probably end, if we talk on the phone, we probably end every communication with "I love you."
But
between us and our children.
Well, I intentionally started that with my family because no one said "I love you" growing up. So I heard a story from someone and it really impacted me, and I said, "Oh, I'm going to start doing this every time, you know, I get off the phone with my family members." And then we do it with everyone, everyone in my family.
I kind of like it. I think it's a positive, but it's only really between our immediate family.
No, that's interesting. Because my family was very much, and I love you, family. You know, I, of course, I said, as I talked about how I didn't receive other positive words for it, but that was something that was sort of always said in departure or on the phone, or and still we still do. And it's funny because the stark contrast with my wife. I'm not sure I've ever heard my wife and an immediate family member tell each other they love each other. Just maybe once, and sort of caught me off guard. I was like, I don't think I've ever heard that, and so. But to my wife's credit, she's really sort of abandoned that practice. Not to say that's good or bad, but sort of I think the way what we've decided for our family is we very much do the same thing. Is it's more when you're not going to see somebody for a period of time, or you're sending your kid out into the world, letting them know I love you, because it's an easy, and giving them a hug, because it's an easy way for them to feel sort of loved and positively reinforced as they go out and to sort of experience what they're going to experience in the world that particular day. The last point I want to make on the importance of teaching your children what I love you means is I think it actually can be, and we'll talk about this more later in the class in coming weeks, on sort of identification of, or seeking to identify what your child's primary love language is. One of the things they say here is ask the kid why do mommy and daddy love you? Well, yes. Well, why do they love you? And when they can understand what love means, oftentimes you'd be surprised what the responses are. Oh, I love daddy because he always tries to make it to my soccer practice. Or I love mommy because she's always there to tuck me in at night. Or she's always there to give me a hug and a kiss. And so when they can equate understanding what I love you means with something beyond just sort of being a parent, then I think it can be a very helpful tool in sort of identifying what your child needs. Is if they're sort of telling you, this is how I think you love me, give me more of this. So I want to double back to encouragement. So just generally by background, by words, by using our words, we're either encouraging or discouraging. I don't think, at least in this author's opinion, there's a whole lot of middle ground there. So you're either encouraging what the child's doing and sort of their development, or either by silence, you're not necessarily, you know, I think he would say silence is almost like abstaining in a vote. You're not voting no, but you're sort of not pushing it in a positive direction. And so one of the difficult things, particularly as we get busy in life, is that encouragement requires enthusiasm and energy about what you're doing. And so even, you know, I'm guilty of this after a long day. I'm tired. I may just want to, you know, either sit down on the couch for a couple of minutes, or kids can sense when they're not, you know, when you're not being energetic about what they're doing. And so on the opposite side, what they say is the enemy of encouragement is anger. So tone and volume in terms of how you're communicating with your children are very important as well. But what I really want to get at is that sort of deliver the right, even when you can sort of encourage the right message, but in the wrong manner. And so what I want to focus on here, sort of I'm a little all over the place, just what I'm trying to get to is something that I'm very, very guilty of is use of negative encouragement. And by that I mean no words, prohibition, don't do this, don't do that, negative reinforcement, as opposed to trying to package a very important child message with your children in encouraging positive behavior, but trying to steer away from doing it and say, no, don't do that. No, don't do that. So trying to focus on specific, encouraging positive specific efforts. It's a lot easier to find, sort of saying to your child, oh, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. It's very easy to sort of pick out that negative behavior. It's almost innate in us to say, don't do that, as opposed to how do we encourage positive behavior or find ways to sort of flip the no word on its head, still get to the same message, but without our primary use of in communicating with our children being the word no. So, like I said, I'm really bad at this. I say probably no is 60%, particularly with my 2-year-old right now. Maybe by necessity, we'll go up to 75% of what I'm telling my child is no, don't do that. And as I was sitting back and sort of making some notes last night, I was like, I don't have a lot of good advice here. I'm going to have to really try and pick some brains because I'm not very, personally, I'm just not very good at it. I'm very much a prohibition style parent. And so I'm curious. Is there any, you guys, please teach me. If you guys, is there anything you've come across that you think works well with your own children, and sort of trying to, one, focus on the positive in terms of encouraging good behavior, but also trying to find positive ways to almost say no. So, any thoughts?
I know, and I always wanted to understand why, from 0 to now. But I know that my son's the same way. My daughter isn't quite as much, but my son, I just try to always explain and try to find some learning opportunity to say, like, why don't we do this, right? And sort of make it less about no and more about, hey, we don't do this because, whatever, right? It's, so, I mean, it's hard sometimes. It's just like, sometimes it's hot, don't touch it, and he's like, ow, and why is it hot? And sort of, but I think sometimes I try to do that to make it a little bit more of a learning opportunity than just, don't do there, don't do there, don't do there. And sometimes they're like, I don't even know what to do. Like, why is he saying no to these things? Like, what can I do? Especially when they're younger. And so I've always tried to, sometimes it's just the answer is no.
Yeah, and that's helpful. And to clarify my point and to make sure I'm trying to adequately represent what the author is saying. It's not saying that the word no isn't important in the right context. You can't, you shouldn't, not sometimes. Sometimes the answer just has to be no. I think what the message is that the use of word no can be a very slippery slope and an easy thing to default to in communicating with your children, as opposed to reserving that for when it's really going to be most impactful in their development.
Sometimes when he says, "I want a cell phone," it's just no. I'm not going to go through all the reasons why you're 6 years old or not getting it. It's just the answer. No.
It depends on their age.
Right.
Yeah. The younger they are, the fewer words you're supposed to use. I found myself just over explaining why why no. Yeah. And they're just tuning you out after about 3 words.
Exactly. The current motif, I think, that's going around, especially with smaller kids, maybe the older ones too, we have a 5-year-old, but it's about making choices. Good choices versus sad choices. Not even bad choices now. That's politically incorrect. We make sad choices. but I think there is value in that, in teaching kids, how to make the right choices in face of, value judgments or what they can do and what they can't do. But sometimes the answer is just flat out no. Now you want to walk on the parking lot. So
we talk about that if it's snowing outside. There's some people say, well, you need to let the child experience being cold. But sometimes, so we have that debate a lot, like, well, are we going to allow them to make that poor decision? And so we kind of go back and forth. Sometimes the child will go outside, oh, it is cold outside, but I don't want to wear my jacket today. So as parents, are we going to let them do that? And then they're going to get sick. And then
if we ask his mother would say, absolutely not, you make her wear her coat. Mm-hmm. And, so it's, I feel like I'm trying to make a decision between the way my parents parented, more authoritarian style of parenting, and this, like, letting kids make decisions and deal with the consequences.
Because in the participation society now, it's like we don't need to have a kind of a touchy-feely breakdown of, why you might need to wear a coat or not. I mean, sometimes we Maybe that's just getting back to the sometimes no means you just have to use no.
And then, you have to decide for yourself as a parent or together, you know, what are going to be those things that it's just like an absolute no and what other issues are debatable.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I think what we see a lot of more that we have to say no to, at least at our house, is Parker's old enough now that he and Peyton quarrel about different things, and there's arguing about this toy, and do I want to play with this? No, I had this. No, it's mine. And then, so I feel like Jim is more of a, he wants to step right in, and no, we're not going to do that, and here's, you know, and I'm more, I guess maybe it's the teacher side of me, I'm like, I just kind of let them work it out. If it gets to a point where they're not going to work it out, then I'll step in and we'll talk about why so-and-so can't do this or, you know, no, we're not going to do it that way, whatnot. But I'm more of a philosophy, because I use this in my classroom too, of just let the two kids kind of work together to work it out, as long as it's not escalating into a, you know, a bad situation. I feel like they have to learn from their own mistakes and things that they're doing in order to make a better choice later on. That if I'm always intervening and I'm always saying, no, don't do this, or no, it's his turn, or no, it's your turn, or no, you know, whatever, then they're never going to learn, per se, how to handle
conflict
in later on in life. You know, yes, right now it's just over the silly toy or whatever, but you know, as they age and things change, it's problems become bigger. Even in my classroom, if there's two students that are having a conflict, I bring both of them over and I'm like, okay, let's talk about what happened. You tell me what happened. You tell me what happened. Let's work it out together. I don't ever say, well, you were wrong or you were wrong, or, you know, we talk about it. And obviously, if it's an escalated issue, then that's different and it has to be looked at in a different way. But smaller conflicts, I feel like they need to work out on their own.
So I had was going to switch into the gear of how do we sort of mix the love language of words of affirmation in with our faith and our you know our values as Christians, and I had must have left it in the car my phone, which I had a list of. And I'll bring the printout next week, and I apologize, I meant to bring it this week, but it was sort of, I think this is a good one, and frankly, an easier one compared to the other four to sort of use because of particularly the scriptural component and sort of the positive affirmation in the life of Jesus that we can use and we can share with our children, you know, sort of the concept of, you know, we are one in the body of Christ. Jesus, you know, Jesus loves us all. And so, I mean, I will bring that list next week. But I think the general messages that I think that could be positively reinforced for our children, particularly when we're learning about our faith, is focusing on when using words, they're God's children. They have the peace of God. They are loving and good people because they are in communion with Jesus Christ. And so I think that there's really... not easy, but meaningful opportunity to package words of affirmation when they're learning about the life of Jesus. And so just wanted to touch base on that. I will have the list next week, so I apologize for omitting that. But, I mean, curious if anybody, you've had experiences in terms of using this as an opportunity to provide sort of those that affirmation of their own self-worth.
God loves all his children. I mean, children, you know, it's especially well, you know, emphasized that, you know, they're the probably some of the most important people in Jesus' life, right? As far as he would always, you know, the well-taught story about how Jesus was having a conversation with a bunch of people, right? And children kind of came and people were telling him, get away, and then Jesus kind of basically separated himself from that conversation, went over and talked to the children. So I think it's, you know, to that standpoint in the scripture, it's, I think Jesus kind of always went out of his way to make sure that the children knew how important they were. But, you know, as far as, I mean, you can see the great program we have around here. But I think the kids are, you know, definitely feel like they're a central part of this church. So I think that's a really important, and thing that we really cherish about this church is just children's programs and things along those lines. I don't know.
When we're saying prayers at night, I'll sometimes, I've said it before, Jesus really likes to hear prayers from children. He hears yours louder than anyone's prayers.
So the last thing, I think we've got just a couple minutes left here, is for those children who we think may have their primary love language, and once again, jumping back for the people that are who weren't here last week, the idea of identifying your child's primary love language is because if you're not speaking to that child in the way that they accept love, even though you may be providing that love in other ways, you may not be sort of reaching them on the level they need to be necessarily reached. And so, for a child that you may be a physically affectionate person, give your child hugs and kisses, but if that's not how they sort of best receive love, you might not be reaching them on the level to sort of help them develop as emotionally healthy as possible. And so for those children who their primary love language is words of affirmation, thinking about how we identify that in our children from an early age on. So, older children may be able to communicate that to you, tell you sort of this is what I need, but sort of from a young age, how do we identify that? The two main ways that at least this book suggests, and I'm curious to hear, any other thoughts on this. One is the child soliciting comments about their work. So if you don't give them praise, are they asking for it? Or even if you give them some level of praise, are they seeking that out from you? I think that's probably the easiest way. But one of the other ways is, and I'm curious if you've had this experience with your children, is are your children displaying that to you? Are they giving you words of affirmation if you've done something for them? Oh, thank you, Mommy. Thank you, Daddy. I really appreciate that. Or, I think that's one of the ways that they've said here is this sort of surefire way. If they're sort of doing that on their own from a young age, then you can probably be pretty safe to assume that that's the best way to exhibit love to them, because they're innately doing it from an early age. Not my children, by the way. There's not a lot of thank yous in the Williams household. But I'm curious if anybody has experienced that or may think that they have children who sort of this is what they're looking for.
Like you, I heard that GGs are very different in how they respond. And GGs would be the one that would be thank you and, appreciates all that. Grayson could, even as a middle child, could care less whether we approved of what he was doing or not. Mm-hmm. He just didn't. That was not, he needed love and he wants love, but, he doesn't need or doesn't want that much of the, good job, you do it that way, Now, wants to help? Absolutely. Loves to help you. But really could care less whether you thank him for it. Interesting.
We don't have a lot of the thank you thing. I think Parker is more coming into that. Peyton doesn't necessarily come out and say it every time, but hers is more of she'll give you a hug or that she's not verbal about
right.
it. She's more she'll show you in some way, draw you a picture. I really enjoy when we went to wherever, she'll draw a picture of me and her together doing that activity. So then I know that she really enjoyed it, but she's not necessarily thank you. It's just she shows it in a different way.
That's a good point. Looking for how our children show love to us, I think, not just words of affirmation, I think is a valuable tool in trying to identify how we can best exhibit love to them. So sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
I was just thinking, if kids are going to be thankful or expressing thankfulness, I think they're probably, we need to be modeling that behavior too. I don't know if it means that that's their love language necessarily, but certainly modeling that behavior would help them. So if they're in a relationship with someone who does need that kind of affirmation. Maggie kind of does that, but I think she sort of like if I've made a special breakfast or something, she kind of recognizes the effort that it took, and she says, "Thanks, Mom, for making a nice breakfast this morning." I don't know if that may be just partially one of her. She's definitely affectionate in the love language, but.
That's a good point, I think, sort of to round out the conversation, is I should probably be careful when I use the word the child's love language. I would say the child's primary love language is probably a better term of art for me, because one of the things they talk about in this book is that blending all five is important. It's sort of not just necessarily in terms of showing love to your child, but modeling out behavior in sort of their ethical, moral, social development, I think, is very important. So call me out if I'm using just love language, because I think we should focus on in each of these as primary, as opposed to, because I don't want to minimize the importance of all five of these and sort of how you interact with your child. Well, I think we are out of time for today. Thank you all for making it despite spring break. And next week, I believe we will be going over, what is our next topic is? Quality time. And we'll talk next week.
Amen.